folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 148. Those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music, conveying my opinion, my experience, and learning over the years, email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes, theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Go to theguitarpodcast.com and sign up for email alerts where you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, that might have been the fastest I've ever spoken that intro. Hey, I wanted to give you a couple of announcements, but one announcement in particular is that if you are in the central Indiana area or within driving a day's driving distance of Indiana, Indianapolis, that is, and our old airport area, the Indiana Guitar Show is coming up April 9th. So look for that out on Facebook, and I'll throw a link to that on the show notes page. I'm going to make a little note to myself. Link to Indiana Guitar Show info. Eddie Prather with Minor Prophet and his buddy, I don't remember his name, putting it on. They've been putting it on for the last, year and a half, 2 years now. They first started out, I think, a spring, fall, and then a spring, and then they didn't do last fall. I think they're just going to do it every spring now, which is kind of disappointing because, then I have to wait a whole year for the next one. But anyway, it's a good show, and anyway, if you're in the area, if you're in Chicago, or I don't know if, St. Louis wouldn't be too terribly far. You might want to stay the night or something, but, Louisville, Evansville, Cincinnati, within a couple-hour driving distance, we drive to the Columbus Guitar Show, Columbus, Ohio. And that's a couple hours to get there, so and that's a really good one to go to. But anyway, yeah, this is coming up, and I'm looking forward to it. Me and a couple buddies actually have a bunch of stuff that we decided we need to probably get rid of. And I'm taking a couple guitars, a handful of pedals, at least one amp, if not two. I'm really debating on that, but anyway. Something I want to tell you about is that I do have, I think I told you that last time, that I have my office in the basement all built out and everything, but I really only had one chair, the one's sitting behind my desk, and then a 5 gallon bucket. Actually, it's probably about 4.5 gallons because it was what I was using for it. It had the drywall mud I was using to drywall, mud the walls, mud the seams, and stuff like that. And so my wife had come down, and I had really no place for her to sit. But finally, I got a futon from Walmart for under $100, and it's just a little bench type couch, and it has no arms, so it's really pretty good to sit and play guitar on. It's pretty firm. I don't know how well it'd be to sleep on if I have to sleep down here, if I get in trouble playing guitar too loud or whatever, but, it's here. Things are moving in, but not quite unpacked. I only have one guitar down here, which is kind of a sad thing right now, but I'm waiting on the slat board to show up at Lowe's. I just wanted the one that has enough for one instead of getting multiples, and it's not that expensive. I've got the guitar hangers. I've got 8 of them from my buddy Dave Bryant at Six Strings Down. Got a bunch of those from him, so I'm ready to put that up and hang some guitars on the wall. And I've got guitars to hang on the wall. I just don't have the slat board or slat wall or whatever it's called. Anyway, you'll correct me and yell at your radio or your headphones or your iPhone or whatever you're listening to me on, which is fine. That's fine. I can't hear you, so you can say whatever you want. Which reminds me that, you know, if, you know, whatever you use to subscribe this, you know, like iTunes or whatever, go out there and write a review if you feel so compelled. And, you know, it, whether good or bad, I don't care. It's the only way I'm going to hear from you, unless, of course, you email me. I haven't really gotten any hate mail. It's usually questions about stuff and that sort of thing. You guys are a pretty friendly bunch, and which I like. I like you guys. You're all right. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, should we buy more guitar gear or maybe get some lessons or work on my skill set of guitar playing or that sort of thing. I don't know how many people really think about that whenever they're, I mean, it's fun to go to a guitar show or a guitar center or your local guitar shop or used guitar shop or scan eBay or Craigslist or Reverb for some new thing that you just got to have. It's going to change your tone or just be a fun toy to play with. I totally understand it because I do the same thing. Got, you know, a bunch of buddies. We'll look at stuff and text each other. Look at this. I can't believe that. Or, wow, that'd be cool. We'll listen, watch this video. You know, that sort of thing. And I get that. But sometimes it's not that new thing. And I don't want to dissuade you from going to the store or going, especially since I mentioned going to the guitar show where you generally buy new equipment, buy and sell new equipment. Or used equipment, usually it's used. But, you know, when you go and you get new stuff, I don't necessarily want to dissuade you from doing that, but maybe consider, hey, you know, take a good hard look. Kind of like what I did a handful of years ago when I was like, what do I really want to do with my guitar playing or guitar right now? Do I want to buy more stuff? I keep buying pedals, and then there's a pedal on the other side of the hill over there that's greener, sounds better, or I think maybe I'll like better, and then I sell this and get that one, and or the same thing with a guitar, or like, you know, Stratocasters. I never tend to hold on to Stratocasters very long, although right now I think I have two. And Telecasters, I just love Telecasters. I love Telecasters more than I love Stratocasters. And, you know, and I've said before, guys, that, you know, I'm much more of a humbucker kind of a guy. I love my Les Paul, and it's not going anywhere ever, 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 ever. And, but, you know, I love Telecasters. I like Telecasters more than I like Stratocasters, but I never seem to hold on to them very long. And I do have a Telecaster right now. And, well, I don't know how long it'll stay around because I'm probably taking to the guitar show. If I get the right price for it, well, I kind of have to sell it, right? You gotta. Because then that funds the next guitar or amp or whatever. Boy. But I want to say that it was back in 2013 that I looked at my guitar playing and, you know, where I was as a guitar player, and I thought, man, you know, what I'd really like to do is to eliminate needing to use a pick and be able to just do everything with just my fingertips. Kind of like Andy on ProGuitarShop.com, those videos. I mean, I know you've seen those, man. They're awesome. Love them. And really dig the stuff that he does. And I thought, man, if I could do that, but yet still sound the way, you know, I typically sound when I'm playing with a pick, and also really develop my finger style beyond, like, classical guitar style, I wanted to do that. So I went to, Dave Morgan. And he's a local guy here in Indianapolis. Pretty well known as a finger style, a syncopated finger style, Travis style guitar player. Pretty fantastic player. And I took lessons from him for about 6 months. And the funny thing is, he got me into thumb picks. So now I really dig thumb picks, and the one kind that I really like are have been out of stock for a year, and I made the mistake of giving a couple buddies of mine some of them, saying, "Man, if you're gonna do thumb picks, this is the one I recommend." And well, and now I'm down to maybe four or five that are readily available on my shelf here. So I'm a little down on that. But the thing is, instead of going from a flat pick to playing without, now I'm using a thumb pick too. But just recently I've been trying to really get away from that and use my thumb sideways so that I can do the palm mute and the thumb picking that way. So it's probably going to take me some time and evolve. But something I want you to think about, though, is that same sort of self-evaluation. Do I really need to be buying this other thing, or should I, or another guitar that, I don't know, I can't talk you out of it, but because we all have gear acquisition syndrome. But, you know, maybe go back and how long has it been since you had a guitar lesson? Or how long has it been since you learned a new song? Or, you know, you're playing the same old songs. Maybe learn a new song or a new style. But yeah, going, you know, just signing up for a month's worth of guitar lessons from a new guitar teacher that you just, you know, or maybe you were hanging out at a store and saw the teacher playing and thought, yeah, that's pretty cool or whatever. And maybe talk to the owner or whoever sets them up and said, you know, talk to them about the different guitar teachers they have there and see if one of them fits the bill. Most of the places will let you sign up for, you know, usually pay up front for a month of lessons, like maybe $72 for the month, like a half hour lesson once a week. And I mean, it's no obligation usually to continue, but hey, you get a month's worth of new content to monkey with on your guitar, and that's pretty cool. And then maybe say, hey, well, you know, I'm gonna check out this other teacher too. I mean, I was very guilty of being very loyal to my guitar teachers, and that was good and bad. But you know, I probably should have bounced around a little more than I did. But after a while, I was like, you know, I really should move on. There was a guy, Nick McElfresh, who taught me. I want to say it was back in 1986, and I learned quite a bit from him in a very short period of time. And I thought, man, this guy's he was pretty awesome guitar player. And I mean, he's still playing out here in Indy now. And then he went out on the road with his band. And I went to a guy named Brian Kennedy, and I stuck with Brian for I don't know how many years. It seemed like I don't know, maybe two straight years of playing, you know, taking lessons from Brian. And the one good thing about Brian was that, you know, we built up this rapport, and I mean, you know, your teacher's, you know, kind of your buddy and stuff, but after a while, he started being really kind of critical of me, and I needed it. I really did, because I was getting kind of full of myself about how, you know, what kind of, about my skill as a guitar player at 15, 16 years old. And, you know, at that time, mid, late 80s, you know, you're a lot of legato type licks, and people are trying to sweep pick and, you know, fast scales and all that stuff. And it's all, you know, a lot of major scale stuff. And then he goes, well, hey, you know, let's play the blues. And he starts playing the blues riff, and I just look at him blankly, and he goes, well, come on, it's in G, you know. There you go. And I start playing in G major. Oh, good grief, it sounded like garbage. And I'm like, wait a minute, I know G, this is G, and I solo in G all the time. And he's like, nah, you don't know how to play the blues. And I was like, holy crap, no I don't, I guess. This is embarrassing, because when I first started playing, my buddies would come over, and they're like, man, we'd play say, oh, we always know when Lauren's playing because he has that bluesy style. But I had no idea. I mean, I was like 14, and they'd say that sort of thing. But, you know, here I am, like 16 years old, and I can't play the blues. I can't play blues. I don't know what key. You tell me we're going to play a G, and I have no idea. So he broke it down for me, got me up to speed there. And I mean, because I could play, if there was a blues solo and it was all tabbed out or whatever, and I learned it, you know, at a guitar for the practicing musician or the tab that they had there at the guitar shop where I, you know, would take lessons, you know, I could learn all that and it'd be blues, but I wouldn't understand, you know, I wasn't putting it together how this worked. And so it was a very embarrassing moment for me because we were just sitting there. It wasn't in a lesson that he did this. We were sitting out where all the guitars were sitting. So anybody that walked in the door could, you know, witness me getting schooled by my old teacher. And it was eye-opening. So, and at that time, honestly, I did have a good understanding of theory, because I could construct a major scale, a minor scale, all the chords within the scale. I had mapped out the modes, so I was trying to memorize the figures of the modes, the patterns, all that. I guess I call them figures, but I called them patterns back then. But yeah, the figures, I was learning those. But yeah, it was kind of a wake up call for me. So, you know, maybe it's a good idea to get that once in a while. So I thought I'd throw that out there about doing that. You know, shaking things up in your guitar playing. Or maybe you're one of those guys that has, and I know I've got at least a few of you listening who have emailed me about this sort of thing, that you played a little bit in high school or in college and just maybe starting to get the hang of it, and then you got out, graduate, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, and you're really really focused on that, of course, and it takes up more of your time. There's no time, no guitar time, right? And so 20, 30 years go by and you haven't played guitar much at all, or you're still playing, you know, this riff you played back in 1986, and now you're kind of like, hey, my kids have gone off to college, or they're married and out, or you're empty nesters, or you've gotten to the point where you've actually retired and you have more time. Either way, you seem to might be freed up for some time, and you're thinking about picking up, dusting off that guitar and sitting on your knee and playing that old riff from 1986, and you go, you know, I keep playing the same riff from 1986. Don't hesitate to go and get some guitar lessons. Don't feel like, man, I'm too old for guitar lessons. Because there's a story I've told many a time. I was 20 years old, my first teaching job, and it's on about springtime, and I come into work, and the guy tells me, hey, I've got a couple new students for you today, and one of them is a retired guy, and he's like in his late 60s, early 70s, and he wants to you know, play some gospel tunes and some country stuff and strumming and that sort of thing, and in walks this guy, and lo and behold, he's in his 70s, and takes several months worth of guitar lessons from me, and it was really pretty cool. So that's probably one of my fonder memories of teaching guitar is working with that guy. Good grief, I can't remember his name. Some of my students I can remember their names, but I can kind of remember what the guy looks like. But think he was a retired farmer, actually, and sold his farm and wanted to play guitar. I think he had a pretty nice guitar too, pretty nice acoustic, like a Martin or something. But yeah, you might be in that situation, and you're going, okay, well, I've got the time. Maybe I've got some money. I'm just going to go take some lessons. Of course, there's plenty of stuff on YouTube, for sure. But you don't have that personal contact, that interaction that you'll get from somebody sitting right across from you with a guitar on their knee, too, going, oh, yeah, hey, do this, try this. It might help you there or here. You get instant feedback instead of, you know, figuring out, oh, wait, that what I'm playing doesn't sound quite right, or a friend saying, there's something missing and I can't quite put my finger on it, no pun intended, but you know, your teacher should be able to do that for you. Anyway, I do want to address an email I got a while back from John, and I replied to him in two separate emails, because I emailed him one thing, and then I thought of something else, and then I wanted to kind of elaborate a little bit more. The title of it is Toadworks Death Rattle, and I did have a pedal years ago called the Toadworks Death Rattle. It was a dual overdrive pedal. One side was like a Tweed amp driven, and the other side was the Plexi side, which, well, it sounded like an old Marshall. And then there was a clean boost that you could set for before or after the overdrive, which is pretty cool. And so I played that for, I don't know, I had it, it was on my board for a good year or so, and off and on, and then I finally did sell it. But he says, I subscribed to your podcast. In one episode, you spoke about the Toadworks Death Rattle, and you said you liked it. I was wondering if you could share some of the settings you like, particularly on the Plexi side. Thanks, John. I said, John, I did like it, but like most players, we think the tone is greener on the other pedal sometimes, so I sold it a while back. I still like the Death Rattle, I think their website has some suggested settings. And I think it's like toadworks.com. Maybe I should link to that. Ryan would probably appreciate that if they're still around. If they still have a website. You know, I haven't even checked to see what he's putting out. He's a real small house, so Toadworks website. Don't you like how I so professionally tell you what I'm writing out and all that? Such a very professional podcast here, right, guys? So then I said, if the Plexi side doesn't seem to be performing, I liked the Tweed side better, honestly. Open up the back and look and see if a wire or a pot is turned and shorting out by touching the case. That's the problem that I had with it at first. I would only play on the Tweed side and use that clean boost after. And instead of hammering it more, and you could do it either way. I mean, I'm not saying this right or wrong. That's why he had a switch on there to go before the clipping diodes or after as more of a clean boost. But when I'd flip over to the Tweed side, it wasn't quite doing the trick. And so I emailed Ryan and emailed back and forth, and he's like, hey, man, you just want to give me a call? And I was like, really? that was pretty cool. So I called him up and talked to him, and he said, you know, what sounds like might be happening is one of the pots might be shorting out on the chassis of the pedal. So I popped that thing open, and lo and behold, it had shifted, and it was shorting out. So I don't know. I've only had it with that pedal, but I can imagine when you're trying to put a bunch of things into a pedal chassis that sort of thing might happen. So if you on any pedal for that matter, if you find that might be, you know, a sound might not be quite right, you might check that out. So yeah, I just went in, pulled the knob off, loosened the nut, and spun it around, tightened it down so it wouldn't. it wasn't shortening out. And I'd looked at the other pots to be sure that they were cool too. And man, it sounded pretty good. But yeah, their website has some suggested settings that are pretty nice. I still kind of liked that tweed side a little better. I don't know why. Maybe it's when they talk about, a buddy of mine, Andy, talks about how the fenders have a negative feedback. And he likes that kind of overdrive better than your Marshall overdrive, which is very much in your face. It's like it's more squishy. And I kind of thought my GA40 had a kind of a sag to it, and he, I don't know, man. This is one of those guys. Andy's one of those guys that I've talked about him before. That will find any guitar or pedal or amp or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm not thinking anything of it. Monkey with it and find its sweet spot. What that amp was meant to do. What, you know, God put it on earth to do. Maybe not even the person who made it knew it was going to sound like that. I don't know, but he's one of those guys. So he's hearing that. He's probably hearing that 1% of tone or that 0.02% of tone that I'm not able to hear. I think I have a pretty good ear for tone. But and then again, and I just know if I like it or not. You know, I'm not really an AC30 kind of a guy, but when I hear other people play on them, I can hear, oh, that sounds cool. That sounds good. If I play on one, it hasn't really worked for me. And I'm not saying that Fenders aren't going to work for me either. I honestly don't have one. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. And I've really, really enjoyed playing on a Gibson, but a Gibson isn't, I guess it's not as forgiving whenever it's, because it's in your face, it doesn't sag. So, I don't know, man. Anyway, I figured I'd address that on the air, too. So there you go, John. And with that, pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes page or Facebook or whatever. Email me if you liked what you heard today. And subscribe using, hey, you like that stuttering? Nice. If you subscribe using iTunes or something other that lets you provide feedback, let them know. Write a review, good or bad. Like I said, you know, most of my email, all my email has been really pretty friendly. The only negatives I've seen have been on iTunes reviews where somebody didn't like it that I was recording the show in my truck or in my car. Is what it is. But like I said before on the last episode, I got this room. It's not sound reinforced that well yet, but I listened to the last episode and it sounded okay. You can provide feedback about that, how it sounds. I am using a condenser mic into a little mixer. I mean, it's not a super high-end condenser mic. It's not like a Ribbon or anything like that, or high-end studio $5,000 mic, which I'm not really interested in doing that. Hey, if it's good enough, man, it's good enough, right? Anyway, thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt reminding you to trust your ear, signing off for the Guitar Podcast.